Hello, and welcome to today's recording of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. In looking at today's front page, we see articles of Event Venues Say Normalcy Unlikely for Another Year and Wise Beyond Her Years. But today, we will start with County Seeks Mask Mandates. Experts Urge Communities to Adopt Order by Benjamin Fisher. As COVID-19 cases continue to climb both in Dubuque and outside of it, Dubuque County's public health officials have started communicating directly with the leaders of its smaller cities to see if they would consider local mask mandates. County Health Department Director Patrice Lambert provided the then latest data Monday during a morning meeting of the County Board of Supervisors. She reported that, as of 9 a.m. Monday, the county's confirmed COVID-19 total had climbed by 915 cases since October 5th. And by population, the areas outside of the city of Dubuque had more than their share of those new diagnoses. According to U.S. Census Bureau data from 2018, the most recent available by zip code, the three zip codes that include Dubuque make up 74% of the county's zip code's total population. The other 13 zip codes in Dubuque County contain the other 26%. Based on the data presented Monday, 29% of the new cases since October 5th have been reported in those 13 zip codes. So, Lambert said she would go to the smaller communities' city councils with the new data and ask them to consider acting. County supervisors voted 2-1 last month against issuing a countywide mask mandate. Since there's not a mandate for masks in the county, we'll be asking each of the city council members if they would consider a mask mandate in their town, if at all possible, Lambert said. The supervisors' vote last month followed a letter and public pleas from 15 mayors of the county's smaller cities, those other than the city of Dubuque, for supervisors to deny the resolution. The mayors, including Dyersville's Jim Heavens, argued that the countywide mandate would violate the spirit of home rule or those councils' authority to govern their own municipalities. On Monday night, Lambert made the first plea to one of those city councils, the one in Dyersville. Heavens asked a list of questions, probing the need for a mandate in the city, but said in no way wanted to diminish the wearing of masks. "We're all feeling along this thing, not knowing what's right and what's wrong," he said. "We want to do what's right for the people, but we're walking a fine line between mandates and what's right." City Council member Tom Westhoff said it looked like the city of Dubuque's mandate had been effective, given college students returned there from other places. Council action on a mandate was not on the meeting's agenda, so no action was taken. While public health officials are discussing measures with the smaller cities in the county, the bulk of new cases still are occurring in the three zip codes that include portions of Dubuque. The 52001 area had 379 new cases, 52002 had 119, and 52003 had 150. But some of the smaller cities racked up significant cases as well in the last 2 weeks. The Dyersville zip code had 85 new cases, for example. The county also released new data showing what percentage of the population of each zip code had tested positive for COVID-19 so far. The Farley zip code led the way with about 7%. In Dyersville zip code, nearly 6% of the population had. County public health officials also for the first time released zip code level data on the number of people who had been diagnosed with the coronavirus but had since recovered. In the three Dubuque zip codes, 1,208, or 37% of their total positive cases since the pandemic began, are listed by the state as having not yet recovered. In the Dyersville zip code, that number is 154, or 39%. In the Peosta, Centralia area, that was 65, or 32%. Altogether, the county had 1,606 cases still active as of Monday morning. Board of Supervisors Interim Executive Director Ed Raber said that total is the second highest in the state, behind only Polk County. "We're still on the wrong side of this," he said. Our peak number of active cases is today. Lambert said she hopes this information leads to people better following public health recommendations that help slow the spread of the virus. We know that all of these mitigation strategies have to go hand in hand, she said. Just wearing masks won't solve our problems. We have to do the others. Maintain 6 feet from each other. Reduce the amount of people at our gatherings as much as we can. Washing our hands as much as we can. And, again, we cannot stress enough staying at home if you're ill. That includes going to school, going to work, going to the grocery store. And if we can reduce our shopping trips to a minimal amount, that would be better than anything. Next, event venues say normalcy unlikely for another year. Entertainment officials don't expect industry to open up until fall of 2021, by Jeff Montgomery. The leader of a major live entertainment venue in Dubuque predicted Monday that it could be a full year before the industry returns to normalcy. Five Flags Center General Manager H.R. Cook said many in the industry believe it will be the fall of 2021 before things open up in the business. Cook's comments were delivered during a virtual meeting of the Dubuque Five Flags Civic Center Commission. The industry is really banking on science and a vaccine that will allow people to safely come back to live events, Cook said. It is not a good time to be in our industry, but when it opens up, we believe it will be a better industry to be in. Although COVID-19 will impact the industry for the foreseeable future, Five Flags is open for business and gearing up for multiple events that will bring modest crowds to the venue. The Dock Dogs World Championships will be held this week, and a handful of concerts still are slated to take place in the remaining months of 2020. The vast space at Five Flags Center offers an advantage over many other local venues. Cook, on Monday, explained that events previously booked for Five Flags Theater, an adjoining facility with a relatively small capacity, can be shifted into the larger Five Flags event space, which offers room for thousands and allows for proper social distancing. In the months ahead, Five Flags also is slated to host multiple sporting events, including wrestling tournaments. In some scenarios, sporting events that were scheduled to take place in states with more rigid COVID-19 regulations are looking at Iowa and taking advantage of the state's looser guidelines. We are not busting at the seams like we used to, and how we expect it to be in the years down the road, said Cook. But the events that we have coming up will keep us busy, keep the doors open, and keep everybody employed. And we hope they will fill up the hotels and restaurants downtown and help them out too. In addition to government restrictions and changes to consumer demand, Cook told commission members that there also are fewer options this year when it comes to booking talent. There are very few touring acts out there, he said. A lot of the groups have come off the road, and they are just waiting things out. Those who are touring are far more expensive. They know they can demand more money because no one else is playing now. Cook emphasized that Five Flags continues to take the virus seriously and shared with commission members a series of health-related policies that were created in conjunction with ASM Global, which manages operations at the city-owned arena and theater. This includes a mandate for everyone in the venue to wear face masks, with the exception of when a patron is within their seat and eating or drinking. Policies also outline requirements concerning hand sanitizer stations and how frequently touched surfaces must be cleaned. Cook noted that the venue is taking steps to ensure safety at concession stands, such as shifting from soda machines to bottled beverages and encouraging the sale of prepackaged food items when possible. Five Flags Center is far from the only entertainment venue in Dubuque that has suffered during the pandemic. At Diamond Joe Casino in Dubuque, the comedic performances, concerts, and other shows that typically populate Mississippi Moon Bar have been on pause since March. We are very mindful of public health, said General Manager and Vice President Wendy Rundy. Our area has been in and out of the red zone, and COVID-19 cases have been high and continue to be high. Having a live show doesn't seem like the right thing to do at this time. Rundy also noted that the Mississippi Moon Bar is a relatively small venue. Unlike Five Flags, it would be complicated to schedule a show and space out patrons. The opportunity to socially distance in a venue that size is very limited, she said. Diamond Joe has canceled shows through the remainder of 2020, and Rundy said it is uncertain if and when such shows would return in 2021. The beginning of the cold and flu season only complicates matters, she said. Like the airlines and a lot of businesses in the hospitality market, it is a wait-and-see approach. Q Casino and Hotel also has canceled events due to COVID-19. Officials declined to speak with the Telegraph Herald for this story. And next from the front page, wise beyond her years. St. Mark's Lucy Houdeker wins Outstanding After School Student Award by Kaylee Reese. Rhonda Ball, who provides multi-site support for St. Mark Youth Enrichment, recalled seeing a child start crying earlier this year during a St. Mark program. Before she could react, Lucy Houdeker stepped in to comfort the crying child, stopping further tears from flowing. She's just wise beyond her years, Ball said of Lucy, 10, a fourth grader at Marshall Elementary School. She's one of those kids that you meet and are just drawn to. She's all around great. Ball nominated Lucy for the 2020 Outstanding After School Student of the Year Award, given annually by the Iowa After School Alliance. Lucy was one of three students who won this year, and she's the first from St. Mark to do so. Lucy, who has attended St. Mark programs since she was a kindergartner, was given balloons, a cookie cake, and her framed certificate by St. Mark staff. I was very surprised, Lucy said. I never knew it was a thing. Ball was eager to share the good news with the Houdekers as soon as she got the phone call that Lucy won earlier this month. It was such an overwhelming feeling, she said. It's a big deal for someone from Dubuque to win this. Kelly Houdeker said she was very proud of her daughter for winning this award, especially since it is a testament to how Lucy treats others. She's always positive, Houdeker said. She's going to be your friend, no matter what. It's important to try to get along with everyone, Lucy added. Just because a person doesn't seem nice at first, it could be because they are shy or nervous, she said. Lucy said she loved partaking in St. Mark activities over the years, including reading a lot of new books, getting really good at puzzles, meeting new friends, and helping out younger students with whatever she can. When I was younger, I played a lot of dodgeball at St. Mark, and dodgeball is still probably my favorite, she said. She also mentioned several fun field trips she went on with other St. Mark students, such as to Convivium Urban Farmstead and Dubuque Regional Humane Society, and on a Christmas trolley ride. St. Mark has been providing both before and after school programs for 30 years to students in Dubuque, Dyersville, and Piosta Elementary Schools. I like knowing that they have somewhere to go, Houdeker said. The kids can learn while you're still working full-time. Lucy also does karate, volleyball, dance and gymnastics, softball, and Girl Scouts. I have fun, and I do what I can, she said, and I know nobody's perfect, but I try my best. St. Mark also received an award through the Iowa After School Alliance and Iowa Department of Education. The 2020 STEM Achievement Award was given to the organization for its quote, Mission to Mars, end quote, program, in which third and fourth graders at Piosta Elementary School designed and landed their own rockets. Ron Parr, St. Mark Program Coordinator, said students also got feedback on their ideas from NASA engineers across the country and took a virtual tour of NASA's campus in Texas. When we found out we won the award, we were surprised, but it really speaks to the quality of the program, he said. It was an intense project. Only three other schools across the state did the mission to Mars. St. Mark Education Coordinator Melanie Dill added that staff has worked with multiple community partners to provide enriching, hands-on activities for students year-round. We strive to have a well-balanced curriculum, she said. And in today's almanac, today is Tuesday, October 20th, the 294th day of 2020. there are 72 days left in the year. On this date, in 1803, the U.S. Senate ratified the Louisiana Purchase. In 1977, three members of the rock group Lynyrd Skynyrd, including lead singer Ronnie Van Zant, were killed along with three others in the crash of a chartered plane near Macomb, Mississippi. In 1987, 10 people were killed when an Air Force jet crashed into a Ramada Inn hotel near Indianapolis International Airport after the pilot, who was trying to make an emergency landing, ejected safely. In 2001, officials answered that anthrax had been discovered in a House postal facility on Capitol Hill. And in 2018, Saudi Arabia announced that journalist Jamal Khashoggi had been killed in Saudi Arabia's consulate in Istanbul. There was immediate international skepticism over the Saudi account that Khashoggi had died during a fistfight. The almanac is courtesy of the Associated Press. Next, from the Dubuque and Tri-State page, three more COVID-19 deaths in Grand County. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Monday's developments included: three more COVID-19-related deaths were reported in Grant County, Wisconsin over the weekend. The state's tracking website was down from Friday night through Sunday night, so the county on Monday provided updated figures that showed its death toll climbed to 26. In Dubuque County, an additional 47 cases of COVID-19 were confirmed between 5 p.m. Sunday and 5 p.m. Monday. Those new cases came from 185 tests, so the county's positivity rate during that 24-hour span was 25.4%. The county's to-date positivity rate inched up to 13.6%. With 944 new confirmed cases and 2,953 new tests during the past 2 weeks, the county's 14-day positivity rate as of 5 p.m. Monday was 32%. The Telegraph Herald's calculation, based on the state's totals, continues to far exceed the state's reported rate due to the state's practice of not counting recent confirmed cases until all data is received. This practice drives down the positivity rate even though those cases have been confirmed. The state reported Dubuque County's 14-day positivity rate at 14.2% as of 5 p.m. Monday. Monday, even though each of those 14 days have had positivity rates topping 20%, based on Telegraph Herald calculations. In fact, September 29th was the last time that Dubuque County had a 24-hour positivity rate of less than 20%. Dubuque County reported 2,912 individuals as recovered, an increase of 12 in 24 hours. By subtracting the number of related deaths and recovered in Dubuque County from the number of confirmed cases, there were 1,715 active cases as of 5 p.m. Monday, an increase of 35 during the time period. Delaware County had 8 new cases in the 24-hour period, while Jones County had 7, Jackson County had 4, and Clayton County had 1. The state continues to report outbreaks in 5 area long-term care centers: Good Neighbor Home in Manchester, 74 cases, 47 recovered; Mercy One Dyersville Senior Care, 33 cases, 20 recovered; Sunnycrest Manor in Dubuque, 19 cases, 16 recovered; Luther Manor Communities in Dubuque, 7 cases, 0 recovered; Edgewood Convalescent Home, 4 cases, 1 recovered. Iowa's statewide confirmed caseload grew by 625 cases during the 24-hour span, reaching 107,746 as of 5 p.m. Monday. The related death toll increased by 11, increasing to 1,539. In Wisconsin, Grant County reported a total of 52 new cases from Saturday to Monday. In that time frame, Iowa County had 19 new cases, Lafayette County 13, and Crawford County 11. Statewide, there were 3,777 new cases reported Monday, pushing the total to 173,891. There were 12 additional related deaths reported, so the state count moved to 1,600. In Illinois, Joe Davies County reported 7 new cases. Statewide, Illinois reported 3,113 new cases Monday, along with 22 additional deaths. That brought the state's totals to 347,161 cases and 9,236 deaths. Next, under Person Who Makes a Difference, Dubuque volunteer always eager to help. Mike Bryson says everyone can use the skills they have to help others, by Annie Mail. A few years back, Mike Bryson listened to a speech from the director of a new Dubuque organization. The speaker, Josh Jasper, recounted his past as a U.S. Marine and his time working for the Los Angeles Police Department. But eventually, Jasper decided to trade his career on the West Coast in order to return to Eastern Iowa, a path that eventually led to the creation of Resources Unite. Bryson decided he, too, wanted to give back and assist Jasper, who was working to help so many in Dubuque. Bryson recruited a team of his employees from the Lowe's store in Dubuque and got to work. The team painted walls at the new Resources Unite office, added carpet, and did a complete makeover to the inside of the building, all for free, said Jasper, the executive director of Resources Unite. He is the first to reach out and say, "I've got the materials," he said. "He is pretty amazing. This is volunteering. It's not his job." Jasper said he has known Bryson for 4 years and has seen him go out of his way to help anyone he can. On a weekly basis, he is reaching out and saying, "What's going on with people needing things?" Jasper said. When COVID started, he was the first to donate personal protective equipment, not only to us, but to other places. Jasper said Bryson doesn't have enough resources to do everything or help everyone, but he uses what he has to make a difference. "He is an incredible community advocate," Jasper said. "He is like, what can I do? He is just one of the most genuine human beings in the world. When you are around him, he is present. He genuinely loves others." When Bryson moved back to Dubuque years ago, he met Janice Kredith during a meeting centered around diversity in Dubuque. He quickly connected with Kredith and saw how much she did to help others in the area. Like years before, when Bryson was inspired by Jasper's speech, Kredith became Bryson's muse to do more. "I've seen her do Christmas presents for folks that had no family in the area," Bryson said. "She is literally one of the most giving people I have ever met. She also was a foster grandparent. That was something she really loved." Recently, Bryson went to see Kredith and found her ill at her home, but was quick to get her the care she needed and remained by her side in the hospital. "He has become what would be a full-time medical advocate," Jasper said. "She wouldn't be with us if it wasn't for Mike." Bryson said throughout his years of volunteer work, he has made lifelong friends and has used the passion and commitment others have inspired in him to make a difference. "It is important for me to show my kids the values that I have," he said. "It doesn't matter if there is a skill set that I have. Not everyone has the same skill set, but they have a skill set, and they can use that to benefit others." From the Dubuque and Tri-State page, News in Brief, Dubuque official to receive Community Health Award. Dubuque's public health specialist will receive an award from Iowa Primary Care Association. Mary Rose Corrigan has been awarded the 2020 Carl Kulcik Memorial Award, according to a press release. The association provides technical assistance and training to Iowa's community health centers. The award was established in recognition of Kulcik's contributions to the community health field prior to his death in 2008, the release states. Corrigan was nominated for the award by Crescent Community Health Center, of which she served as board president for nearly 15 years. Corrigan will be presented the award at the virtual Iowa Community Health Conference on Tuesday, October 27th. League of Women Voters to hold candidate forums. The Dubuque League of Women Voters will host a pair of online candidate forums. Local legislative candidates will be the focus of the first forum, held at 6:30 p.m. today, according to a press release. Invited participants include Iowa Senator Pam Jochim, Democrat from Dubuque, and her Republican challenger, Jennifer Smith. Iowa Representative Chuck Eisenhart, Democrat from Dubuque, who is running unopposed. Iowa Representative Lindsey James, Democrat from Dubuque, and Republican challenger Pauline Chilton. And Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, Republican from Peosta, and Democratic challenger Ryan Quinn. The second forum will be held at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, October 27th, and will feature Dubuque County Supervisor Dave Baker, Democrat from Dubuque, and Republican challenger Harley Potthoff, as well as two candidates running unopposed for county office, Auditor candidate Kevin Dragato and County Sheriff Joe Kennedy. There will be no in-person audiences for these forums. Questions for the candidates can be mailed to League of Women Voters, P.O. Box 123, Dubuque, Iowa 52004, or submitted online at lwv.org/local-leagues/lwv-dubuque. Both forums will be broadcast live and rebroadcast several times on Dubuque City Channel 8 or Digital 117.2, as well as online at cityofdubuque.org. Two Dubuque priests test positive for COVID-19. Two Dubuque priests have tested positive for COVID-19, and their respective churches' parish offices are closed. The Reverend Stephen Rozonke of St. Anthony Parish is now resting at home, according to an email from the parish. It notes that Rozonke reported moderate flu-like symptoms. A notice on the parish website states that the parish office is closed until Monday, October 26th, due to the positive COVID cases. Meanwhile, the Reverend Andy Upa of Church of the Nativity also reported having contracted the coronavirus. "My symptoms have been fairly mild, but it is still miserable," he wrote in a letter printed in the church bulletin. "Initially, it was a headache, sore throat, and fatigue, which aren't terribly unusual. Then it switched to chills, body soreness, high temperature, and loss of taste and smell, and that was when I knew it was not normal." The parish's office also was closed, though a notice notes that messages left at 563-582-1839 will be returned as soon as possible. From across the tri-states, Dateline Cascade, Iowa. Fire department fundraiser canceled. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the Cascade Fire Department will not hold its annual fundraising Halloween dance. Instead, it is finding alternative ways to make up the lost funds with a Halloween parade on Saturday, October 31st. The department recently has been selling raffle tickets by mail for cash prizes to be drawn the night of the parade. Tickets can be purchased for $5 each or 5 tickets for $20 from any Cascade firefighter or at Lyons Service Center. The parade is scheduled to start at 6:30 p.m. from the ambulance garage to the fire station. It is designed to eliminate potential germ spread through social distancing, having no crowd interaction, and no throwing of candy. Every year, all proceeds from the dance fund the volunteer fire department's equipment replacement needs. From Clayton County, conservation run to benefit trail expansion. Clayton County Conservation will host the second PHT 15K, a run to raise funds for the Pony Hollow Trail expansion. The run will begin at 9 a.m. Saturday, October 24th at Pine Hollow Trail. Only online or mailed-in pre-registrations will be accepted. For more information, call 563-245-1516. The funds raised from this race will be used for future trail expansion efforts to join the two Pony Hollow trailheads into a continuous loop, states an online announcement. Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. State approves UWP projects. Two construction projects at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville recently were approved by the State of Wisconsin Building Commission. The first is the renovation of the heating, cooling, and ventilation system and replacement of skylights on the second and third floors of Carman Library. The project, which cost nearly $4.8 million, will be completed by December 2022. New electric meters also will be installed throughout the campus. The project will be completed by December 2022. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Ella M. Cloft Pitts, 87, of Lamont, passed away on Saturday, October 17th. Funeral Mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 21st, at St. Lawrence Catholic Church in Otter Creek. Visitation will be from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. today at Hockman Miller Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Bellevue. Additional visitation will begin 1 hour prior to Mass on Wednesday at the church. Burial will be in Holy Rosary Catholic Cemetery in Lamont. Funeral Mass will be live streamed on the Hockman Funeral Home Facebook page. It is required to utilize masks and respect social distancing during the visitation at the funeral home and the funeral mass due to COVID-19 pandemic. Ella was born May 17, 1933, in Springbrook, the daughter of Michael and Bertha Holman Cloft. She married Donald Dan Pitts on June 4, 1957, at Saints Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Springbrook. He passed away on June 24, 1994. Ella graduated from St. Joseph's High School and lived her whole life on the farm, milking cows and baling hay. Ella worked at Clinton Engines, ASCS office, bartender at Country Pride in Zwingle, and Metrics Company in Dubuque for 22 years until her retirement at the age of 77. She enjoyed playing euchre, bingo, dancing, fishing, and holiday get-togethers. Ella learned to use her iPad to stay in touch with family and friends. She took much pride in her grandchildren and great-grandchildren and enjoyed attending their events. Ella was known for her apple cookies, meatloaf, and preparing holiday meals. She always had food on the table for anyone who stopped at the house. She will be truly missed by all who knew and loved her. Thank you to the friends and neighbors who have helped her over the years, especially those who drove her to doctor appointments, picked up her mail, mowed the lawn, and helped clear snow. The family would also like to thank Hospice of Dubuque for their care and concern during these final days. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be designated to Hospice of Dubuque or St. Lawrence Catholic Church in Ella's memory. Memorials and condolences may be mailed to Hockman Mayor Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 100 North 6th Street, Bellevue, Iowa, 52031, if you are unable to attend services, care of Ella Pitts' family. Ella's family asks everyone to sign the online guestbook and leave a condolence at www.hockmanfuneralhome.com. Gilbert B. Willenborg, 92, of Dyersville, died on Saturday, October 18th. Visitation will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. Thursday, October 22nd, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, October 23rd, at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville. Burial will be in St. Francis Cemetery. Thomas Tommy L. Fari, 28, of Platteville, Wisconsin, died on Friday, October 16th, of natural causes. At this time, there will be no formal services. The Melby Funeral Home and Crematory Platteville is serving the family. Online condolences can be made at www.melbyfh.com. Tommy was born on December 25th, 1991, in Darlington, Wisconsin, son of Adam Fari and Susan Turner Redfern. He was married to Nicole Wernemont. Tommy was working as an audio engineer apprentice at Asylum Recordings in Dubuque. He enjoyed working as a DJ and video gaming. He was very proud of his heritage, being a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, where a couple of years ago, through a special ceremony, he was named Ahoskaga, his native name given by the Ho-Chunk Nation. Lester M. Entringer, 91, of Dubuque, passed away on October 18th at Mercy One Medical Center. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, October 21st, at St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church, with Reverend Jim Garand officiating. Burial will follow in Mount Olivet Cemetery, where military honors will be accorded. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. A live stream of the funeral service will be on the Funeral Home Facebook page. Lester was born in Lamont, Iowa, and grew up on a farm where he learned the value of hard work and his love of family. After graduation from Holy Rosary High School, he attended Loras Academy on a scholarship before attending radio school in Omaha, Nebraska. He was drafted in the Army and served stateside during the Korean War, where he developed close friendships and was a radio instructor. After being honorably discharged, he worked briefly at a radio station in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, before returning to Dubuque to work at KDTH. He soon was hired as a technician at the Gerald Cable Company in Dubuque. He moved his way up to become the head technician and worked for 45 years with the many cable companies over the years, including Gerald, Teleprompter, TCI, and Group W Cable. He enjoyed and took pride in his work and loved seeing the changes in technology over the years, from vacuum tubes to satellite dishes to fiber optics. While his job was his vocation, nothing meant more to him than his family. He met Jean Christ at the bus stop on a Clark Drive in Dubuque, and he gave her a ride to her job at Mold's studio downtown where he worked at the cable company. Lester and Jean married on a beautiful day on September 5th in 1960. He was a faithful, devout Catholic, which led him and his wife Jean to purchase their home close to St. Joseph the Worker Church and then St. Joseph's School, where they were parishioners all their lives. Having five children, family was their joy and inspiration. They went on many family vacations and did other activities together, which helped the family grow in love and devotion to each other. Lester was an avid ham radio operator and had his radio set up in the basement where he would go, quote, downstairs to go on his net, end quote, almost every night. He loved crossword puzzles from the daily paper and any other puzzles he could get his hands on right up into his 90s. He also loved aviation and flew planes in his college years, including his favorite plane, the Piper Cub. Lester's love of family also includes his grandson, Ben, and his wife, Ashley, and his great-grandchildren. Ben has followed in Lester's footsteps as a head technician at Mediacom. Les loved getting together for family dinners and would make his famous pie and bread that we all loved. Up until the end, a main concern was to make sure his family was safe and successful in their lives. In his final days on earth, he was surrounded by his children as we talked, laughed, and reminisced together, which was his greatest joy in life. Dad will be with us in our memories and through the many stories we will continue to tell at our family gatherings. He will always be remembered for his dry sense of humor, funny stories, witty intelligence, Catholic faith, and most importantly, his love of family. The family thanks Hawkeye Care, who showed compassion and kindness where he lived his last few months, and our brother-in-law, Fred White, who encouraged Dad to never give up. The family would also like to thank the staff at Mercy ER, ICU, and Mercy Comfort Care for their dedicated service where we were able to stay at his side until Dad passed peacefully. In lieu of flowers, a Lester Entringer Memorial Fund has been established. Sister Barbara Jean Tasher, BVM, Jean Vincent, 85, of 1050 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, died Thursday, October 15th at Marion Hall. Sharing of memories via Zoom will be from 9:30 to 10:15 a.m. on Thursday, October 22nd. A virtual visitation will be held from 10:30 to 10:45 a.m., followed immediately by funeral services. Burial is in the Mount Carmel Cemetery. Sister Barbara Jean was an elementary teacher in Chicago, DeKalb, Illinois, Kansas City, Missouri, Phoenix, and Santa Ana in Burbank, California. She ministered as a licensed psychiatric technician in Santa Ana and Orange, California, and a parish visitor in North Hollywood, California. She was born December 14, 1934, in Chicago, to Vincent and Imogen Seymour Tasher. She entered the BVM congregation on September 8, 1952, from St. Bede Parish, Fox Lake, Illinois. She professed first vows on March 19, 1955, and final vows on July 16, 1960. Memorials may be given to Sisters of Charity, BVM Support Fund, 1100 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, Iowa, 52003. Miller Funeral Home, 1185 Highway 35 North, East Dubuque, Illinois, 61025, is in charge of arrangements. Marcia F. Daly, 62, of Lancaster, died on Monday, October 12th. A celebration of life will be held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the meeting room in Lancaster. Private family burial will be held in Hillside Cemetery in Lancaster. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster is assisting the family. Charlene M. Miller, 80, of Dubuque, died on Saturday, October 17th. A Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, October 24th, at Church of the Resurrection in Dubuque. Visitation will be held from 9:15 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday at the church. Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory is assisting the family. Barbara Ann Blokel Horn, otherwise known as Mama, Grandma, and Aunt Barb, 71, of East Dubuque, Illinois, passed away peacefully Sunday, October 17th, at home surrounded by family. A private visitation and service will be held Wednesday, October 21st, at Galena Bible Church, with Pastor Gary Kirst officiating. Burial will be in the East Dubuque Cemetery. The Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque is serving the family. The funeral will be live-streamed on the Miller Funeral Home Group Facebook page. Face mask and social distancing will be required. Barbara was born on September 30, 1949, in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, daughter of Irwin and Bernice Rowell Blokel. Her favorite memories while growing up involved Grandpa George, her siblings, the Point Comfort Cabin in Oshkosh, and the family dog, Duchess. Barbara was a graduate of Dubuque Senior High School in 1967 and of Mercy Medical Center School of Nursing in 1970 and became an RN. She was employed at Mercy Hospital in the surgical department for 26 years until her retirement in 2013. Nursing and caring for others was a passion of hers and is where she made many lifelong friendships. After Barbara found herself at odds with the free time she had after retirement, she turned to her love of books and a position as a library clerk at the East Dubuque Public Library. Working with Jessica and the staff there made her very happy. Barbara met her husband, Nick Horn, in 1994, and they were married at Galena Bible Church in April 1995, where her three girls stood up in support of the marriage. Barbara loved being outdoors, and after their eldest grandson, Tavian, was born, Barb, Nick, and Tavian enjoyed making camping trips in Wisconsin, where they would fish, canoe, and enjoy fires. They also enjoyed heading to Madison for an annual trip to see kites on ice. In her later years, Barbara enjoyed studying butterflies and fishing with her grandsons, Jackson and Josiah, as well as traveling to Brookfield to watch them play basketball and baseball. Halloween was Barbara's favorite holiday, as her vast collection of masks and wigs can attest to. The family would like to thank Chris and Stacy from Hospice of Dubuque and special friend Carla Johnson for their care of Barbara. Memorials may be given to Hospice of Dubuque. Online condolences can be made at Miller Funeral Home. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerfhed.com. Carrie Jane Salutas, 57, originally from Platteville, Wisconsin, died on Tuesday, October 13th, in Hillsboro, Indiana. Burial will be held at the Richland Center Cemetery for the family. A celebration of life will be planned at a later date. The Melby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville is assisting the family. Memorials may be made to the Iron Bridge Dinner Theater Company and sent in care of the Melby Funeral Home, P.O. Box 245 in Platteville, Wisconsin, 53818. Online condolences may be made at www.melbyfh.com. Carey was born on September 26, 1963, to Charles and Ireta Saludos in Platteville. She graduated from Platteville High School and received her bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. During high school, she was crowned Platteville's Junior Miss and performed in the Kids from Wisconsin. She was a member of the Wisconsin Singers during her college career. After finishing her undergraduate degree, she cruised the world working on board the vessels of Royal Viking Line. Following her years at sea, she came back to the States and performed and choreographed shows all over the country. Her stage credits include 7 national tours of the Church Basement Ladies, performing the role of Karen, one of her all-time favorites. Her work was seen at Harrah's NOLA and TB Pack, Circa 21, the Palace Theater, the Old Creamery, the Iron Bridge Dinner Theater, Flat Rock Playhouse, La Comedia, the Fireside, the Las Vegas Strip, and Universal Studios in Osaka, Japan. She was honored to star alongside Steve Gatlin in several productions in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Carey felt blessed to have a loving family and many friends. Carey was treasured as a daughter, sister, niece, cousin, and friend. She was a compassionate and caring individual. Her life was well-lived and filled with adventure on the road. She will always be remembered and missed dearly. Lowell W. Freeland, 83, of Monticello, Iowa, passed away Saturday, October 17. Lowell was born on June 22, 1937, in Chicago, Illinois, the son of Warren Freeland and Gladys Mickelson Freeland. He married Judith Freeland on August 14, 1965, at Peniel Presbyterian Church in rural Monticello. Lowell served in the U.S. Air Force, where he gained a strong interest in electronics. That interest carried on throughout his career as a teacher and an employee of Rockwell Collins and as an amateur ham radio operator. For over 20 years, Lowell's home and family has been Camp Courageous, where he is fondly remembered by thousands of special needs campers as the camp's trained conductor, along with many other volunteer duties. At Lowell's request, there will be no funeral service or visitation. Memorials may be given to the Camp Courageous Foundation, P.O. Box 418, Monticello, Iowa, 52310, or www.campcourageous.org. Special memories can be shared on the camp's Facebook page. We are grateful for the care and compassion shown to Lowell by the Monticello Ambulance Service, St. Luke's ED, and the St. Luke's ICU staff. Ray J. Ward, 103, of Edgewood, Iowa, died on Monday, October 19th. Private family interment will be held at a later date at Fairview Cemetery in Earlville. And from the sports page, under Prep Volleyball, Dyersville Beckman. Versatile Schmidt commits to Cyclones. Beckman Jr. provides options with ability to play multiple spots, by Jim Leitner. Kirsten Schmidt could feel the positive vibes surrounding the Iowa State University volleyball program from 2 hours away. The Dyersville Beckman Jr. All-Stater this summer verbally committed to play for Cyclones coach Christy Johnson Lynch beginning in 2022. And because the recruiting process took place in the coronavirus world, Schmidt's feel for the program came in somewhat unconventional ways. "I really loved the atmosphere Iowa State has," Schmidt said. "They have such a great program, and it just felt like home. Christy and all the coaching staff made me feel very welcome, and I love how we've grown our relationships over every single phone call we've had since the process began. It isn't just about volleyball. We've gotten to know each other as people more and more. Since I couldn't go on an official visit, obviously because of COVID, I talked with several of the players over Zoom, which made me want to commit even more. I found out they loved it too, and they really made me want to play for Iowa State." Johnson Lynch has built a powerhouse program since taking over the program in 2005. After finishing 16-15 and missing the postseason in her inaugural campaign, she has never finished lower than 5 games over .500 while building a 306-win, 155-loss overall record, 169-95 in the ultra-competitive Big 12 Conference, and making 14 consecutive postseason appearances. That includes 5 trips to the regional semifinals. Schmidt, a 5'11 outside hitter, right side hitter, will bring plenty of versatility to the Cyclones. She won a state championship as a freshman on Beckman's shuttle hurdle relay and has qualified for state in the high jump. Through 30 volleyball matches covering 75 sets this season, Schmidt has accumulated 269 kills against 65 errors in 557 attempts for a .370 hitting efficiency. She has also contributed 35 solo blocks, 66 total blocks, 94 digs, and has connected on 174 of 186 serves, or 93.5%. Schmidt cracked the varsity as a sophomore last season and contributed 267 kills against 73 errors in 579 swings for a .335 efficiency in 51 matches covering 128 sets. She added 22 solo blocks, 69 total blocks, and 93 digs while going 100 for 115 or 87% from the service line. Schmidt earned second-team All-State accolades and made the All-State tournament team after helping the Trailblazers reach the state final. "Kirsten's an extremely talented young lady," said Todd Troutman, who has led the Trailblazers to a 28-9 record in his 24th season as head coach. "I would be very interested to see exactly where they're going to use her, because she has some skills that would be a lot of fun to utilize at that level. She's not real big or imposing for an outside hitter, but her vertical leap is just so incredible. She plays like 6'2 because of her wingspan and her ability to jump. Her athleticism and her vertical really set her apart from a lot of female athletes. You just don't see that ability to elevate. She can play above the net, which adds a whole new dimension to her game. And she has some setting ability too. So, they're going to have a lot of really good options with her. They've got themselves a heck of an athlete. And she has dedicated herself to the craft. Her commitment to Iowa State only marked the beginning of her journey, not a final destination. I know I have to keep on being productive in the weight room, keep pushing myself in practice, and wanting to be a better player every day," Schmidt said. "Since committing, it honestly has made me work 10 times harder than I was. I just want to keep progressing so I can make an impact when I go to Iowa State in a couple of years. It's a big weight lifted off my shoulders to have my college commitment out of the way. I can just focus on playing." The number 8-ranked Trailblazers open Iowa Class 2A Region 7 play on Wednesday against Bellevue. From Sports in Brief, Purdue coach to miss Iowa game after second positive test. Purdue coach Jeff Brohm is expected to miss Saturday's season opener against Iowa after a second test confirmed he has COVID-19. The Boilermakers have been undergoing daily rapid testing since September 30th, and it was Brohm's test Sunday morning that initially came back positive. A second test conducted immediately afterward also came back positive Sunday night. Big Ten protocol requires players who test positive to sit out 21 days, but staff members are required to isolate 10 days. Athletic Director Mike Bobinski said there is no chance Brohm will be on the sideline, as Alabama coach Nick Saban was last week, even if he tests negative. Bobinski said the school is looking into whether it would be permissible for Brohm to do any virtual coaching this weekend against the visiting Hawkeyes. Offensive coordinator Brian Brohm will replace his brother on the sideline and will continue to call plays. Jeff Brohm said he also will continue to watch practices, take notes, and confer with players and his assistant coaches through Zoom calls this week. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. As always, thanks for listening, and be safe.